models, incredible amount of effort to put the beads in the right place. It only takes two angles to specify where to aim a telescope to see a particular star. Because the astronomers aren't going anywhere. What difference does it make whether it's 20 light years away or 40 light years? But if you're trying to look at a three-dimensional model and see if you can find a pattern that matches a two-dimensional pattern, you better get the distances right. And so she gradually got rid of stars and finally found one pattern that matched angle for angle, line length for line length, what Betty had drawn. It was a happy day. The star in the upper right there, I don't know if you can see them. Oh, there it is. Up there. That's the sun. It's kind of nice that the sun is in the pattern since they're coming here. And all the stars in the pattern are sun-like stars, and they're all in a plane. Think of slices of pepperoni on a big flat pizza, as opposed to raisins in a big fat loaf of raisin bread in all directions. What difference does it make? It's much easier to get to other stars if they're in the same plane, which is kind of nifty, in other words, for travel. So, exciting piece of work. And, yeah, all the numbers changed slightly because we finally got a good satellite up there. The Europeans did, European Space Agency. The Hipparco satellite measured the distances to hundreds of thousands of stars accurately, they did. And it's kind of neat. Doesn't really change the results. A monument of persistence and care. She was a member of Mensa, brilliant woman. Those are the names of the stars. Gliese is the name of the best catalog at that time. The distances have all changed slightly. And the base stars down at the bottom, Zeta 1 Reticuli and Zeta 2 Reticuli. And those other numbers, LY means light years. And they're all changed slightly, but it doesn't change the net results. This is based on Betty doing a drawing under the direction from the psychiatrist, Ben Simon, who did the hypnosis sessions, with the caveat, if she could remember it accurately. I wrote the first article on it in the infamous Saga magazine. And then I suggested to Terry Dickinson, editor of Astronomy magazine, that he do an article, and he did. He talked to a bunch of people, published an article, and he had letters over the next year, about 10 different letters. And he put out this 32-page full-color booklet. They sold 10,000 copies almost immediately, which is almost unheard of for this kind of thing. And then Carl Sagan's lawyer threatened to sue them because his name was on the front where it belongs because he's one of the people who submitted a letter. And they made me an offer I couldn't refuse, so I wound up buying 18,000 copies of the Zeta Reticuli incident. And I'd sell you one, except I'm out of the darn things long ago. A lot of interest in them. It's a wonderful piece of work, if for no other reason than it shows that a persistent amateur. And in my movie, UFOs Are Real, we have the head of the astronomy department at Ohio State University saying how accurate her work was. Dr. David Saunders was there with J. Allen Hynek when I introduced them to her, and she made a presentation about the work she was doing. David was very impressed, as was Allen. That's the bust she did. Your typical little gray man, if you want. Your typical Zeta Reticulan, whatever you want to call them. There's a book by Kathleen Martin and myself. And if you're wondering, so why is my name first? It's because the publisher insisted. It'll sell more, he says. Now, there's no way you can turn down a publisher who says if we do it this way, it'll sell more than if we do it that way. So we had my name be first. It's done pretty well, and it's been optioned for a movie as well. And you may remember a television movie with James Earl Jones playing Barney. There's been a lot of work done on this since, of course. I was a technical advisor on that film, and what's ironical is that the Universal Studios got my name from the Air Force. I was living in the Los Angeles area, and they were supposed to, when the Air Force got asked about UFOs, I'll refer him to a scientist. I was the local scientist on UFOs, I guess. It was kind of fun. and James Earl Jones. I don't know how many of you saw that movie, The UFO Incident with James Earl Jones. What an actor. What an actor. And it wasn't 100% accurate, but it was damn good. And if you get close to accurate, you're doing pretty well with Hollywood. Any Hollywood representatives here? Forget I said that. Now, there is a congressman from Minnesota who was doing a television show that I went to do in New York, and I sent them a bunch of stuff in advance. And Carl Flock and I, another researcher, were sort of arguing about some of the things. And I'll be darned if he doesn't come on and say that it couldn't have been a big story, that Roswell story, if it only appeared in the Roswell paper. I'd sent him articles from the Chicago paper, like this one, from San Francisco paper, from a Sacramento paper, from a Spokane paper. Appeared all over the place. He hadn't bothered to look at them. I don't consider that a very scientific approach to things either. You know, don't bother me with the facts. My mind's made up. And what you have to understand about the publicity back then, it was pre-television for the most part. And the time zones got in the way. If you put something out in New Mexico at noon, it's too late for all the papers on the East Coast. Made it to Chicago and cities west. And the cover story appears with, well, I think, let's see if we have it. There's the Roswell paper. And somebody insisted to me, made a big fuss at me after a lecture, that RAF, R-A-A-F, is Royal Australian Air Force. No, I'm sorry, it's Roswell Army Airfield. That's the front page of the Roswell paper. There's New Mexico. Roswell's in the middle of nowhere, down in the lower right-hand corner there. 200 miles of nothing between it and Albuquerque, El Paso, and Amarillo. If you're in Roswell, boy, you want to be there. It's not on the way to any place. And yet, when we had the 50th anniversary celebration, there were thousands and thousands of people and 300 newsmen there. And each year at the festival, we had thousands of people, and they built new motels and stuff, and I don't even get a cut. It's not fair. That yellow base is White Sands Missile Range, which is where the first atomic bomb was tested, where we're testing to capture German V-2s. Now, there's Major Marcel in General Ramey's office. Ramey's office was in Fort Worth, Texas, headquarters of the 8th Air Force. Colonel Blanchard, the head of the base at Roswell, instructed Jesse, first of all, to go out to the crash site after the rancher came into town, when he said there was lots of this stuff out there. Went out there, brought back some of the stuff, and Colonel Blanchard says, take it to 8th Air Force headquarters at Fort Worth. And, of course, he followed instructions. And when he got there, General Ramey, head of the 8th Air Force, Blanchard's boss, says, you don't say anything. I'll take care of it. And he told the press that it was just a radar reflector from a weather balloon, which wasn't the material that Jesse brought with him from Roswell. And the press bought it hook, line, and sinker, and so the newspapers changed the story after 4 hours, or the next day for most papers. Let me say it politely. They lied. I was the first to talk to Jesse, 1978. Now, there's General Ramey on the left, Colonel Dubose on the right. I found Dubose. I presumed he probably was a West Pointer. Ramey was dead. Blanchard was dead when I got involved in all this stuff. But I checked with West Point, and sure enough, Thomas Jefferson Dubose, graduate. They told me he lived in Florida. I called. He was up north at the time, but came back, made contact with him, visited with him. He's in my movie, Recollections of Roswell, which has testimony from 27 witnesses, almost all of whom are now dead. But he put it on the line. He took the call from Ramey's boss, giving him three orders. Get the press off our back. I don't care how you do it. Send some of that wreckage up here today with one of your colonel couriers. He was in Washington. And I don't want you ever to talk about it again, not even with your buddy Roger Ramey. That's an order. Do I need to put it in writing, Colonel? No, sir. When a two-star general tells a colonel what to do, he does it, especially when they know each other. And both West Pointers, incidentally. I mean, you get people asking, well, why didn't he complain? This is right after the war. You follow orders. It's not a question of do you jump. It's how high should I jump? That's the way things were. That's not an indictment of any way. That's how you run a war. You notice that General Ramey's holding a piece of paper in his hand there, lower left. Well, because they used a fancy speed graphic camera with much better resolution than today's digital cameras, it turns out, with a lot of care, you can read most of this memo. And it includes things like victims of the wreck. All balloons have victims of their wrecks, don't they? Somebody's read it. It's very much a statement of there having been a crash, saucer with bodies. There's Tommy DuBose. Great guy. Took us to the nicest restaurant in Orlando. Don Schmidt and I interviewed him after that first interview with me. He was in his late 80s when he died, incidentally. A real gentleman. He set up the Air Force's search and rescue teams, incidentally. He was an instructor pilot. Quite a guy. This is the next day's paper. They grabbed the rancher, brought him into the base. They gave him a new story. And that got run, too. He was told to lie, and he did. Under duress, but what the heck. And as I mentioned earlier, the Air Force put out a report making the absurd explanation that it was crash test dummies like this one that people referred to as bodies, even though none were dropped until 6 years after Roswell. If you call that a scientific conclusion, boy, you're one up on me. Time travel for crash test dummies. Why don't we use it for people? Save a lot on fuel, you know. And I did talk to the man on the right. I like the fact that this is in an Air Force flight uniform. Any rancher finding that would, of course, think, oh, this is the latest in alien Air Force gear. You know, how dumb can you get? But the New York Times bought it. What else matters? Now, in 1984, a roll of film showed up in the mailbox of a man named Jamie Chandray in California. Jamie and I and Bill Moore had worked together on Roswell stuff for several years. And here comes this roll of film. When it was processed, two sets of eight negatives each of a top secret MAJIC, M-A-J-I-C, document, a briefing for President-elect Eisenhower dated 18 November, 1952. And it states that President Truman authorized the establishment of a group called Operation Majestic 12. Named the 12 guys, outstanding group, said they were accountable only to the president. All but one, as far as we knew at the time, seemed to have high-level security clearances because of the work that they were doing at the time in 1947 when the group was established. The one came as a shocker. I mentioned earlier Donald Menzel, Harvard University astronomer, total debunker of UFOs. How could he be on a group that knew that there had been a crash saucer and alien bodies recovered? Didn't make sense. But I checked it out. I had to get permission from three people to see his files at Harvard. Son of a gun. He wrote to Jack Kennedy that he had a longer continuous connection with the National Security Agency, NSA. No such agency, never says anything. They're the guys who spy on everybody, you know, and all that stuff. Turns out Menzel was a world-class cryptographer. Had a longer connection with the NSA and its Navy predecessor of anybody in the country, he said to Jack Kennedy. Pretty shocking to me, because I didn't like him. The briefing officer was Admiral Roscoe Hillencoder, who was the director of Central Intelligence in 1947. You'll recognize some of those names. Secretary of Defense James Forrestal, General Nathan Twining went on to be Chief of Staff of the Air Force, then Chairman of the Joint Chiefs. Hoyt Vandenberg had been head of the CIA and chairman, Air Force chief of staff. And there's Donald Menzel, third from the bottom. I checked out all these guys, and they all made sense except Menzel. So I looked at his paper and found out he made sense, too, much to everybody's surprise. Can you keep secrets? Of course you can. This is a letter from Truman to Forrestal establishing the group. I've been at the Forrestal Library with his papers. I love going to archives. There's something handled, something specific, detailed. This is the authorization. I talked to somebody who worked for Truman the entire time he was in the White House. Could he find anything wrong with this document? No. And he told me a lot of other stuff that was useful. Now, here's one. This is the one that Phil Klass said, oh, that's a phony. It's the large PICA type. They only use the small elite type, and he had 9 documents to prove it. Of course, he's never been to the Eisenhower Library. He didn't make note of the fact they had 250,000 pages of NSC, National Security Council materials. It's kind of a big jump from 9 to 250,000. And, of course, I'd spent time there, and he made it worth my while to go back again, offered me $100 each for every genuine document done in the same size and style type, PICA type. I sent him 20 out of my office file cabinet, and I knew he wouldn't allow some because he had criteria. And then I was going to the Eisenhower Library anyway, so I quickly picked up 14 more, sent him copies and an invoice for $1,000. He set a limit, unfortunately, of maximum of 10. I'd have been a wealthy man. I'd have kept looking for another day at the library. There's a watermark on the paper. The paper dates to the right time and place and all kinds of good things. And it's all in my book, Top Secret Magic, and I can't sell you a copy because I'm out of them until I get home. And there's this check to me for $1,000. And he got madder than hell when I published it in a report I wrote. Threatened to sue me. And I said, Phil, you sent me a check. I Xeroxed it. I took the check to the bank. They cashed it. I can do whatever I darn please with the Xerox. And then he shut up, because that's true. But for those who don't think, you know, he never told anybody about paying me, of course. And his papers are at the American Philosophical Society Library in Philadelphia. 35 cases of material. And there is no Friedman file, even though we had a large correspondence. So nobody would know about this who went to check out the files. Don't bother me with the facts. My mind's made up, you see. I asked his wife, believe it or not, if she knew of any other place where his papers might be, and she said no. Now, I can't say he destroyed them. All I can say is I don't know where they are, and they're not where they should be, and I have copies, though, so anybody who wants a copy, I can provide. Nasty? No. Revenge. There's the book, Top Secret Magic. Now, Jesse Marcel, Jr., Dr. Jesse Marcel, he was a flight surgeon, helicopter pilot, as I mentioned earlier, 225 combat hours in Iraq. And none of his titles were mentioned when he was interviewed in that mockumentary that I talked about earlier, which I think smells of rotten journalism. That was the Peter Jennings mockumentary. Crash at Corona, that's my book with Don Berliner. The definitive study of the Roswell incident. Where does Corona come in? That's actually the small town closest to where the events took place. Roswell's where the base was. It's where the military were. That's where the action was. But Corona is the town closest to the site of the crash. And I have a few copies of Recollections of Roswell, firsthand testimony from 27 witnesses. There was a rich European head of a country, owns a country, big art collector. He sponsored bringing all these people there. We filmed them, and I'm glad we did, because we have them on record, not secondhand testimony, talking to the camera. And the ones who we couldn't get there, we went out and talked to. So that's being scientific. If these guys have anything to say, let's find out. Let's not say A talked to B, who talked to C, who said that D said something. You can listen to them. Decide on your own. New Mexico is kind of a special place. People trust each other. You know, they don't lock their doors. This is back then anyway. I like the place because the people are like that. And I've got people saying, why would anybody live in New Mexico? That sheriff must have been a redneck. He had a college degree and his three kids had about five between them. They like living out there and I don't blame them one little bit. And I've given the rules for the debunkers. You can't read them from there. I'm sorry, but they're what you might expect. Four major rules. Don't bother me with the facts. My mind's made up. What the public doesn't know, I'm not going to tell them. If you can't attack the data, attack the people. It's easier. Do research by proclamation because investigation is too much trouble. All of those are in violation of the scientific spirit of how you're supposed to get at truth. It applies not only to UFOs. Pick any subject that you want to attack. Those are the rules. Easy to do. Simple and straightforward. And then, of course, I like some of the corollaries. Absence of evidence is evidence for absence. All believers are liars. All non-believers only tell the truth. And it goes on. But this isn't the only area where this is true. I'll show you some pictures. This is Hawaii. Look at the UFO up above, not the girls below, please. I think that's an ionized air region behind the craft related to a magneto-aerodynamic propulsion system similar to the electromagnetic submarine built back in the 60s by a Westinghouse scientist. There's four pictures taken in Salt Lake City, Utah. You'll see the Mormon temple there on the right on number three. The date's given there. I stood at the exact location where the pictures were taken. Look at number five. Again, I think it's an ionized air plasma related to a magneto-aerodynamic propulsion system. And I get people saying, how come the pictures are only just lights in the sky at night? The answer is that's not true. Simply not true. This is Santa Ana, California, 1964. Got 100 pages of analysis of these pictures. They've been published. It was taken by a guy who worked for Santa Ana County. Driving along in his vehicle, had a Polaroid camera, took pictures through the window. This is a lousy copy of it. I got to get that changed. From McMinnville, Oregon. Articles have been published in scientific journals about these pictures. And even the University of Colorado couldn't find an explanation for this other than, you know, an unidentified flying object. Island of Trindade, east of the coast of Brazil. Object comes in from the right, as you can see from the numbers. Saturn-shaped object. Circles around, goes back out, upper right-hand corner. 40 guys on the deck of the ship watch this object. Official Brazilian Navy, part of the International Geophysical Year. Photographer took the pictures. They were developed on board the ship, and they were eventually released to the public by the president of Brazil, Juscelino Kubitschek. And everybody knows he was a liar and a fraud and put out phony stuff, right? No, not right at all. This is back, it's funny, there was a recent article of somebody saying, oh, Arthur C. Clarke, if there'd been anything to UFOs, they would have been seen during the International Geophysical Year. Yeah, Arthur, they were. And here are some of the pictures taken with witnesses around. You know, I get a little irked when people say there aren't any decent pictures and only lights in the sky at night that could be anything and stuff like that. That is not a light in the sky. It's not at night. It sure doesn't look like anything conventional. And it was around long enough for four pictures to be taken and released to the public by the president of Brazil. Now, of course, there's no cover-ups. I showed this earlier, but there's a typical CIA UFO document that it took me 5 years to get about UFOs by their statement, not mine. This is my favorite document. They couldn't even find six lousy words to declassify on this. Deny in toto. This is a story of 1952, especially the Flatwoods Monster case. That was the year in which orders were issued to shoot them down if they don't land when ordered to do so. And that's where I have heard several people tell me about airplanes not going up, not coming back after being sent up to shoot them down. And an Air Force general said, we've scrambled more than 300 times, just routine. And, of course, Air Force generals always tell the truth. We know that. There's my 168 minutes of a, it's a two CD set. I have a few of those left. But it's the big picture. You can find out all kinds of stuff here. There's Seth Shostak. I told you about him before, the SETI Institute. I'm hoping he will read that book of mine that's on his nightstand. I doubt it.